live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is, in fact, the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. Times such as these, says in the book of Esther. God picks timing. It's remarkable. You know, we did an interview with the gentleman who wrote a book called Person of Interest, and his name always escapes me. It's terrible. He's a great, great Christian author who points out that God could have chosen any time for the Lord Jesus to come. But he chose a time where the enemy of the Jewish people, the Romans, had installed this dictatorship, which had this advantage of fewer thieves on the road, so the apostles could go about without being robbed, although they were stoned and beaten and all but one of them eventually killed. But there was a common language. There was a mail service. The Romans were fanatical road builders and tunnel builders. There were mountains over which the Apostle Paul couldn't have gone in the time that he did, that the Romans they put tunnels through it and just aided all this. They just picked this moment in time from the sublime word of God, well, not really the word of God, but paraphrasing of it, to the words of John Mellencamp, as I've shared with you, your life is now. This is, you're doing what you're going to do in the midst of a cultural revolution. Whatever you've been doing during the midst of a cultural revolution, during the midst of the attack on the American system. There is going to be a revolution of the humble. It's happening. The revolution of the humble began in Virginia. It's going to spread. And the revolution of the humble is the one true way to victory. And there is this saying, it's a quote of Christ, that people who would put stumbling blocks in front of children or harm children would be better off having a millstone thrown about their neck and being tossed into the ocean. And when I speak those words and I think about what has been done in Seattle, in Western Washington, to black families, it makes me sad and furious and frustrated. I can never become black. And having lived in the deepest of, well, I know we're not supposed to say ghettos, but it was one, as one of two white people in my building, as one of two white people in about a 20-block region. And if you doubt that, I was racially profiled. Driving out of my my building one day at 21st and Yesler around there. I was driving, I was late for work, and I was speeding. Yeah, that's me. And it's going like a 35 and a 25, which isn't really speeding in my mind, although it is. And I got pulled over by an officer. And the officer came up to the car and said, "What are you doing here? First of all, let's ignore the speeding, but why are you here?" I said, "Oh, I live here." He goes, "You what?" He's a black cop. "You what? I live here." He goes, "No, you don't. Well, you're here like seeking drugs or something or stolen goods or prostitution." "No, no, no. I live here. Here's my driver's license." And he goes, this is a near quote, "Boy, what are you thinking? You live here?" "Yeah, officer, I live here. This is my neighborhood." And I think about what I learned in the Central District. Number one, it was really interesting when I got there. People didn't say please or thank you. And I thought it was because I was white. I was in the, the grocery stores, like Thriftway. And people would ask me to do things. And one lady came to me one day. She said, "Give me a ride home." I looked at her like, where's the please to that sentence? "Give me a ride home." And so, okay, well, she's an older lady. She needs a ride. I'll give her a ride. Pulled up outside her apartment. I could still drive straight to it. And she took her bags out. She goes, "All right, then." And I thought, wow, it's just because I'm white. And then I realized, wait, there's a cultural difference here. The please and thank you apparently is implied. I'd never lived in a different culture. I grew up in Spokane. I knew two black people growing up. No, that's not true. I knew because I went to a small bit of college. I knew like three, four black people growing up. So I didn't have a frame of reference. And I'm not saying that black people don't say please or thank you, by the way. I'm saying in that neighborhood at that time, lots of people didn't say please or thank you. I'm not saying that that is true for black people. I don't do absolutes. I met a young man. Now he's a young boy. He's not yet a man. And he was in our apartment building. And he used to come and bum quarters from me. I'd be down in the laundry room and he would come and he would bum quarters. And sometimes he'd have magic tricks. He had a little magic set. I think his grandma bought him. And he'd do these magic tricks and I would give him quarters. And he was the sweetest little boy. And he was filthy a lot of time. He'd go out and play like a boy back when playing was a thing. We had sort of a playground across the way that wasn't yet strewn with needles. And some days he'd come in smelling clean and fresh, and it was church day or it was visiting with his dad day, visiting with his dad. His mom would clean him up when his dad came by, make sure he was good and shiny. And he always comes to mind when I think of what the party is doing to the black community, the party being the dictator of Washington State, Jay Inslee. The party being Smack Daddy, Dal Constantine. The party being heroin, Dan Satterberg. Being Shama Sawant. Being this criminal Seattle City Council of criminals. Of people employing thuggery by policy. He always comes to mind. Every time I hear of a shooting, he comes to mind. I picture him in the laundry room. Every time I hear about the record high murders that the party has installed in this area, I think of this little boy. Well, I think of him for that reason. Not because I have any reason to believe that's his station. I would not be surprised in the least to learn that he runs companies or that he's successful in this realm or he's a church pastor or he is a great father. It wouldn't surprise me a bit. He was a nice, smart, clever little boy, precocious, you might say. The reason that all comes to mind is the second time I was moving out of that building. And I've been taking stuff up and down. I was on the fourth story. There was four stories to the building. And I brought my couch to the elevator to take it down because I couldn't get it down the stairs. I was doing it on my own. Wouldn't let my girlfriend help me move. That's not a man thing. Don't have your girlfriend help you move. And the elevator came up, and there were two cops, a white cop and a black cop, and a dead man. And blood all over. And the elevator came up, and one of the cops said, "This one's in use." I said, "Yes, I see." And the black cop said, "You know him?" I said, "Yes, I do." And the white cop said, "Does he have kids?" I said, "He has a little boy." And the string of curse words came out of that cop's mouth. The white cop and the black cop just looking, just, "Oh, good, now we need to go tell the family. Tell the little boy." And they said, "Does he live here?" I said, "Yes, sir, he does. I know where he lives. I can tell you." I asked, "Can I ask what went on?" He goes, "Drug deal." I went downstairs. They had shot through our front door, shot him. It was a glass door. Shot him. He made a run, got on the elevator, died in the elevator, bleeding out. So I think about that a lot. Of all the victories we shared last hour of this radio station, and there's a lot more of them, and Jason Rantz and I will go through some of those victories. Jason's going to join me exclusively about 8 o'clock. I think about that, and I get really angry. And when I heard about Charlena Lyles, and for those outside the area, you're about to learn about Charlena Lyles. There's been a $3.5 million settlement of all the wrong people paying these bills, which is the taxpayer. So when you hear this, note where the blame is and note where it isn't. Tell you about Charlena before we check traffic with the right way traffic. The soft bigotry of low expectations on display.
Wealthy white men needed land, so they took it from indigenous people and then forced blacks into slavery. Think of our nation's problem as more like an apple pie, with the racial injustice baked right into every aspect of our society.
No, we're not standing with Black Lives Matter. We want our police. Refund our police. Refund our police.
Well, her voice doesn't matter. She's just some black lady who wants law and order. It's nuts. Crazy that a black lady would want law and order. Crazy when you lived in the heart of the ghetto and you've seen poverty and you've seen gang shootings. And I was personally kidnapped in my car for a little while. That's a true story. It was a fascinating time. I never thought I'd be kidnapped. When you've seen parents weep over this stuff and now it's becoming a regular occurrence. Now we've had 3 shootings in 4 days in Kent and it's all gang retribution. That's not racism. That's the soft bigotry of low expectations on display in the party who says black people cannot be expected to show up on time. That's a cultural invention of white people. Let me tell you something. That's a terribly rude thing. I apologize. Let me share this. Guess what? Put a culture that shows up on time against a culture that doesn't. The culture that shows up on time will win every time.
How can you prove that? That's quite an assertion. That's an extraordinary claim that would require extraordinary evidence.
How about this? What time do we show up to attack the other village? 9 a.m. To the other village. What time should we be there to defend ourselves? What are you, a racist? Time? What are you talking about? Get there when you get there. Whatever. Charlena Lyles was beloved by her family, and she was deeply mentally ill, as I understand it. She was beloved by her children, and as I understand it, was often extremely neglectful because she was riddled with mental illness, as I understand Charlene's story. Kids loved Mama. Sometimes Mama wouldn't clean the house for months, as I understand the story of Charlena Lyles, and sometimes you'd go over and there was rotted food on the kitchen table and not enough food to eat, as I understand the story of this woman. Charlena Lyles was a black woman. This is what people have learned about her. She was black. I am certain, because I've heard them speak of her, that Charlena's family wanted help for her. Probably tried to protect her, perhaps enabled. I don't know because I have no position to judge. I know this. She wasn't murdered. The police officers who ultimately responded to the home the day Charlena called and reported a fake burglary, you could hear them in the 911 call. You could hear them in their car as the senior officer briefed the junior officer about Charlena. And he told his partner, the junior partner, hey, sometimes this lady is in her right mind, sometimes she's not. Sometimes she flies off the handle, sometimes she sees things that aren't there, right? It's really troubled. She's got kids, and sometimes she's great. I don't know which Charlena we're going to see. Just be prepared for that. And I know her, so let me do the talking. It wasn't, hey, this black lady or this N-word or this crazy idiot or this insane. Or there's none of that. Because they knew her. Because cops want to come home at night doesn't mean they're horrible people. They got to Charlena's home, and it was one of those days where she was not in her right mind. And you can hear the 911 call. Or rather, you could hear the camera footage, body cam footage. Charlena, put down the scissors. Charlena, put them down. Charlena, put the scissors down. Charlena, no! No! Boom, boom. They were sent out as the last line of defense. And they didn't kill her because she was black. She was not in her right mind, and she wanted to stab them. That's just a little lady with scissors. Then you've never been in a use of force training. You've never been in a fight for your life if you said that just now. So her family has received a $3.5 million
settlement. Back in 2017, Lyles called 911 to report a burglary at her home. A woman known to police because of a previous mental health call. The two officers are seen here on surveillance video responding to Lyles' apartment near Magnuson Park in Seattle.
Hello, good morning. You called it?
Minutes later, the officers are heard yelling commands. They allege she charged them with a knife. Several rounds are fired. Lyles was shot and killed.
These officers had not much of a plan, didn't follow the plan that they have, didn't follow policy, didn't follow training, didn't bring their mandated equipment with them, with which they could have de-escalated this case.
Attorneys representing Lyles' estate brought a civil suit in state court against Seattle police and the two responding officers claiming negligence.
They had batons. Lord knows I wish they would have broken her arm in 100 pieces and knocked the knife out with a baton.
And not killed her.
She'd be alive today.
That case, set for trial early next year, was instead settled late Monday night, with the city agreeing to pay $3.5 million.
So with all due respect to the attorney, sir, you have no idea what you're talking about. A sharp instrument, you knock it out of the hand when someone is out of their right mind. That's a good way to get stabbed in the neck. Furthermore, the officer did forget his taser, and he was disciplined for that, and it's his responsibility to have his taser. But here's where the story takes the turn that is about the party. Charlita Lyles went to mental health court. You know, the great system run by the great anti-racists like Smack Daddy Dal Constantine and Heroin Dan Satterberg, and overseen by the single most corrupt attorney general in the United States of America, corrupt and vicious Sideshow Bob Ferguson. In court, she apparently said, hey, I've got this problem. Sometimes I turn into a werewolf. And so does my daughter. We're both werewolves. Sometimes we turn into walking upright dogs. Well, that's nice. Go home. Sorry that you're going to go get killed. Because you're going to try to kill others. And they made it about race. Tell me about the compassion of a party that pretends to, oh, we need health care for everybody. Free health care. A woman says to a mental health judge, I turn into a werewolf and so does my daughter, who isn't given compulsory help. She'd be alive today for a lot of reasons if she'd been given that help. But no, blame the cops, who are the last step call, the pressure release valve for all your policies. And this goes now to a national basis. I seem to recall, and maybe it's just me, that a black person went and killed a bunch of white people, ran over them. The guy who'd been talking about killing white people, in fact. Did that happen, or is Ron DeSantis high?
One of the things I think that's been most frustrating to witness in terms of law enforcement is how anti-law enforcement narratives are consistently spun by these national corporate media outlets. They will swoop into a community, they will create a false narrative, and then they kind of just leave and they never correct the record when what they're saying is obviously false. And we're seeing that right now in real time with Waukesha, Wisconsin, in terms of what happened there. You will look at some of these corporate outlets and they will say that an SUV drove into a parade of Christmas folks. And you're thinking like, really, is that how it works? The SUVs, they just drive by themselves? This just kind of happened? And they say, oh, this was a big accident. You never actually hear the discussion about who committed this, what was the motivation. This guy was a career criminal, let out on, didn't really have any bail, basically, should not have even been on the street, had clear anti-white animus. And this was an intentional act.
And he does correctly call out the corporate media for that, because it's disappeared from their pages. But it disappeared after CNN appears to have once again, and they've been caught doing this multiple times, appears to have whitened his skin in their articles. Maybe that will bring Charlena Lyles back. We'll come back on this, the last day of the Todd Herman Show on KTTH, before I shift over to a new podcast. Thank you again to the management here for letting us go out this way. It's unbelievably kind. Nice, Brady. Nice. That's how you do a talk radio bump. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show. About a half hour, 28 minutes for Jason Rantz swings by. That's going to be hard. You know, it's a funny thing about radio that Jason and I do the drive times. Obviously, you know that. I do morning drive. Jason does afternoon drive. And in that way, we're sort of on not different teams, because we're on the same team. But we have sort of our differing enterprises. And yet you push the station forward together. And so when I can see, and I look and see Jason omnipresent on Fox News, it's his work. He did that. You supported him, or he wouldn't have gotten there. But it's sort of a group thing in that way, that the station has grown because there are these twin pillars of morning in afternoon drive. And so you do kind of look at that and say, wow, that's the guy I work with who's having all that success and all that visibility. And that's sort of a cool thing in radio, because there are radio stations where people utterly hate each other's guts. Truly. Where staff people, would, given the opportunity to do so, would kill each other in the sleep. That's not ever been anything like that at KTTH. Not ever. It's very much the opposite. Even with the vital disagreements I have with my friend Michael, vital disagreements, vital and disappointing, it's never been anything other than a friendly thing. And sometimes that's hard. And harder when we're being divided. And that is the ultimate goal of the enemy. The enemy is a thief and a liar and a murderer, and he loves division. And I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. This is the last KTTH show. I'm shifting over to a podcast-only platform. It occurred to me that the devil has himself a business model, and he's selling pain and poverty. He's selling it to unethical companies who turn around and launder it as pleasure and safety.
Good Morning America is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper 360, brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline, brought to you by Pfizer.
Making a difference, brought to you by Pfizer.
CNN Tonight, brought to you by Pfizer.
Early Start, brought to you by Pfizer.
Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front, brought to you by Pfizer.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
This Weather Report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports Update brought to you by Pfizer.
Wow. Meet the Press data download brought to you by Pfizer.
This portion of CBS This Morning
is answered by Pfizer.
On how to find the hidden sugars in the American family diet. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Got it. That does end. Wow. I mean, obviously we've played that before, but really, I mean, just imagine that. So the devil has himself a business model. Insert pain and misery into the minds of children. You're sad because, little girl, you're actually a little boy. But good news, big pharma will shoot you up with wrong sex hormones, and then big medicine will chop up your genitalia and build fake genitalia that doesn't perform sexually or in terms of reproduction. But dang it, it's a really good illusion for, you know, until you reach your 30s. But come on, who wants to live past 30? COVID shots. The great data analyst, who we're the only radio interview he's ever done because he has to stay sort of cloaked given what he does for a living. He was a bigwig in naval intelligence. I can tell you that part. I know who he actually is. Ethical skeptic. I've verified his identity. He points this out about the variant, the frightening variant, that they've skipped the, you know, Xi, because you can't name it after the Chinese dictator. He points this out using his characteristic data analysis, which is a regression analysis looking at the trends of how viruses have spread around the country and around the world. And he writes this about the new variant. This is his quote. Similar to the 6,000-year-old Earth notion versus Paleostrata, there is no way that a December 2020 virus erupted across the Earth and produced this. A, contiguous. B, mathematically segmented. C, sequence distribution in a mere 3 months. It's a fairy tale. He's been tracking this story for, well, 2 years. And what he is telling us and continues to tell us is COVID was in existence long before the party came along and said, hey, business model, cha-ching, let's give it a new name. The novel coronavirus sweeping the globe has no immunity. The human immune system is impotent to stop it. Healthcare experts say this could be the start of a global pandemic that could kill up to 1 billion people, but they have a safe and effective series of vaccines in the planning stages. I'm Graham Milestone. The data on this is becoming more and more clear. So is this data. There is a there's a group I belong to of people who are now tracking injuries from these mRNA injections. It's called The Real, Not Rare. And they interview people who've been injected and harmed, such as a healthcare worker whose name is Missouri. Oh, no, pardon me. Her name is Lisa Collins. The questioner's name is Zuri. Her name is Lisa Collins. Here's her picture. Here's her staff badge. Young woman injured. Well, there's injuries, and then there's this. And this comes from the Children's Defense Fund, Robert Kennedy's group. So a guy gets forced to get injected. Here's how. This guy's name, he was 49 years old. And he's from Texas. He had recovered from the COVID. 49 years old, younger than me. Had recovered from the COVID. Had the robust, durable, elastic, effective, safe, risk-free antibodies. But he needed a lung transplant. And the hospital said, not unless you get the injections. So he got the injections. And it killed him. Developed a pulmonary embolism and arterial fibrillation. Now, point of fact, the man was sick. He needed a lung transplant. So they gave him an injection that is particularly deadly in the lungs, even though he had immunity. Well, but the devil's got themselves a business model. This is the CEO of Pfizer. If you listen really closely, you're going to learn none of you will ever be fully vaccinated.
I did make a projection months ago that the most likely scenario it is that we will need after the third dose annual revaccinations against COVID for multiple reasons, because of the immunity that will be waning, because of the virus that I'm sure will be maintained around the world for the years to come, and also because of the need of variants that will emerge. I'm more confident right now that this will be the case than I was when I made the projection. I think we are going to have an annual revaccination. I don't know how we're going to call it, but will be an annual revaccination, and that should be able to keep us really safe.
really safe, just like the dead man. Well, I mean, the fact is, he can't get COVID again now. We'll come back with just a few more things on the Todd Herman Show. Well, I thank Brady Bones for handling the production duties of the program. I did speak with, as we've been doing this since our good friend Alex relocated and got his job now building the kingdom, working at a private Christian school. Spoke to or sent Alex a note last night. He and I are still very much in touch. Very much consider Alex a brother. So thankful to have worked with him on this. Well, this is it. This is on this radio station, the last of just a few more things. I don't know how many features, if any, I'm going to take over to the podcast. I will take Seattle Spirit because I promised people I would, and therefore I will. Probably personal as well. Well, I will. But let's just do this. This may be hard for me. I have a love-hate with this feature, just so you know. Listeners love this, and I'm deeply thankful for that. It's actually the most work to put together for all of us, producer, hosts, everybody else. It is just a few more things, which is defined as a quick arrangement of news-like items laid out.
Just a few more.
See, what are you doing to me? In a logical and sequentially ordered list, thereby inserting some order back into a world being made purposely chaotic by the party and by an errant click on the mouse. By a host who's starting to get all...
Just a few more things.
Hence the numbering of the items, the order.
Thing one.
This is an interesting comparison. See if you can make more sense of it than I have been able to. This is MSNBC comparing... banning abortion with something else.
Well, Governor Reeves is correct. The right to an abortion or the right to privacy is nowhere explicitly enumerated in the Constitution, but neither are other constitutional principles that we hold sacrosanct, like the right to marry. And certainly, even though there was a period of time when many individuals in this country would have voted to ban interracial marriage or even more recently, same-sex marriage, the court has held that the Constitution protects those kinds of intimate decisions.
Huh. Now, when you marry someone interracially, does that mean that you kill the other person? No, it doesn't. And the Constitution has something to say about the protection of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which starts with life. See, it doesn't make sense, but it's a neat hat trick she's trying there. Next up in just a few more things.
Thing two.
This is Chris Cuomo, an actor, now on indefinite suspension from CNN because he embarrassed his colleagues. Because, you know, helping a family member, that's bad. Lying to the country, well, that's good. That's to be expected.
So far, again, little to panic on based on the facts. Are there cases here? Maybe. They don't know. There are cases nearby in Canada and at least 17 other countries.
From the moment COVID came into the United States of America, there was never any reason to panic. And yet that man spent 2 years panicking people. That man spent 2 years as an actor on TV pretending to be a mask zealot when in private he doesn't wear them at all. Pretending that President Trump said, shoot yourself off with bleach or drink it, when in fact his wife bathes in a bleach solution because she thought magically that would protect her from an upper respiratory virus, bathing in bleach. But then there was reason to panic. Why? Orange man. I said it back in the day. COVID was the election, and the election was COVID. Next up, and just a few more things.
Thing three.
This is Jimmy Kimmel. He's so funny. Speaking about bleach, etc., this is Jimmy Kimmel.
Europe is pushing back, and America's sitting there like sheep. Oh, you know, this is great. We'll just go along with, you know, what these guys who've gotten nothing right in the last 2 years tell us. It's absolute insanity.
Your dad told us to drink bleach. I mean,
but he didn't. Now, it'd be really funny if Trump had said that, but he didn't. So tell me, what is the real difference between actor Chris Cuomo and actor Jimmy Kimmel? I guess one of them has a beard and one's on steroids, I heard, through friends who know what like a steroid rage looks like at an Iowa State Fair. Next up, in just a few more
Thing
things.
Four.
Peter Ducey. Fox News, an actual journalist, talking to another actress, her name Jen Psaki.
Before Joe Biden was president, he said that COVID travel restrictions on foreign countries were hysterical xenophobia and fear-mongering. So what changed?
Well, I would say first, to put it in full context, Peter, what the president was critical of was the way that the former president put out, I believe, a xenophobic tweet and how he called what he called the coronavirus. He believes we should follow the advice of health and medical experts. That's exactly what he did in putting in place these restrictions over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that answers everything. Quite an actress, isn't she? Last up, and just a few more things, and yeah, wow, that hit. Last up, and just a few more things.
Thing five.
At least there's sense in the world. We've got Biden, but then we've got the dictator of New Zealand who's giving people wonderful freedoms.
And importantly, because I know this is a question many Aucklanders have, you can now see family and friends again in their homes and use the bathroom inside. Luxury.
That's so kind of her to let you go pee. Jason Rantz stops by for the last time on this show. Coming up next.